What is real? How do you define real?
You can't jump into cash. Cash is trash. What do? You get out.
Relevant Peter Schiff, fresh out of Twitter jail. How are you?
Yeah, I'm here, man. It was brief, but yeah, they let me out.
Yeah, that's great, man. I'm happy that you're out. I want to start it off with one of your early tweets that really, you know, sets you up. Relevant Peter Schiff, Bitcoin can't succeed. The people working on it are too smart. The innovations are happening too fast. The virus is spreading too far. The principles make too much sense. The problems it fixes are too many. The hash rate is too high. The blocks are produced too consistently. This was hilarious. This is how I first came across your account, maybe a year and a half ago. I really appreciate, you know, your discourse in the community, in the feed. So how did this all come about? Are you just obsessed with Peter Schiff?
Not in the slightest, man. I've got my real account, which I use minimally, but I found myself spending an inordinate amount of my replies, which are very few, kind of telling what a clown he was being, because he's just very disingenuous when he talks about Bitcoin and you know, clearly knows better and is kind of more just talking his book, or really just kind of fishing for engagement, or you know, whatever it may be. So I was just kind of felt like acting an ass one day, and I fired up the account and basically just started out spitting out a bunch of stuff. And at first it was almost kind of like mimicking him or saying things in ways that a less Bitcoin ignorant version of him would be saying. Obviously, it was well received at first, because at the time he was really digging into the Bitcoin community. And I'm sure you're very familiar with how the Bitcoin, maybe it's not a community, whatever the hell you call it.
Sure.
When people kind of kick that nest, how they act. So obviously they loved kind of me giving Peter some shit. But after that, it just kind of turned into, you know, it was more engagement. I had fun interacting with people. There's good energy with everybody on there. And, yeah, I kind of wear him like a mask now, you know. I mean, it might as well be Kermit the Frog. I would be giving him an equal amount of shit if it was from a different anonymous account.
Right.
I just happen to wear his face like a mask, and people always tag me when it's something related to him, as you could imagine.
Sure. I got to read one more. Bitcoin is going to $1 per sat.
Yeah, man.
So funny. How did you come to Bitcoin?
I kind of tell my story kind of the same, so forgive any of your audience who may have heard it before.
Sure.
But I got exposed to Bitcoin a lot more than I should have before I paid attention to it, but usually I kind of back up before Bitcoin and kind of give some context and kind of what made me a Bitcoiner. I used to be in the white collar job circuit, basically did strategy consulting, was on the road all the time. Met a guy in Philly on a project, and he kind of showed me the ropes on how to play poker. We were playing up Atlantic City all the time, really enjoyed learning poker and kind of the nuance and the bankroll management, the long-term mindset, and kind of had the grind it out mentality and that type of thing. Slowly but surely ended up kind of morphing into professionals a weird word to use when I say poker player, but I did it for a living. So, I mean, I guess I played professionally, but
what was that transition like? To jump over from, you know, white collar worker to, you know, maybe black market poker player?
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't even call it black market. Sure. Or anything like that. But I mean, it was slow and steady, kind of like Bitcoin. I mean, it just kind of slowly ate it. It went from, you know, let's play a couple games at the, you know, at the DoubleTree conference room or something like that while we're on the road, to all night and just walk into work, completely exhausted the next day or whatever it may be. And eventually over time, it just kind of became a full-time gig, where it just kind of consumed more and more of my time until I was playing. But anyways, I kind of played full-time, ended up leaving the job. My last stint at the white collar job was basically, I was living in Foxwoods Casino for multiple months instead of because that's my project was in Providence, so I was commuting to my project instead of commuting to the casino. And by that point, I realized, like, okay, I'm wasting my time with the job thing. So, got rid of the job and actually kind of stopped playing in casinos and migrated to playing online, which is kind of what primed me to be I guess to understand censorship, because when Poker Black Friday happened, if you're familiar with that event, it happened I think it was like 2011. Basically, the Congress passed an act. The FBI seized a bunch of the sites, made it where you weren't allowed to transfer money to and from them. And it didn't make it illegal, but it made everybody feel like it was illegal, and then kind of black market and weird. And then the games pretty much dried up and all the easy money went away. Had a bunch of money locked up that I'll never see.
Right.
Which is unfortunate. So that's kind of the first lesson with not your keys, not your coins, and censorship.
Right.
Which kind of, I guess, taught me that lesson. But then kind of to move along to how I found, to answer your question, which is a long-winded answer there.
No worries.
After I kind of gave up on playing poker, at least as a full-time gig, I wanted to do something. I didn't want to really get back in the consulting world. It's good money, but it's just a burnout lifestyle, traveling all the time. So I basically opened up a few locations for cell phone retail stores, basically selling, you know, just like a Verizon or AT&T type of store, selling cell phone service and satellite internet service. And once I kind of spent the time to get that fully staffed and operational and work out all the kinks of it, I started running a poker game out of the back of my stores, and which did better than the business for me. So that was a nice thing too, to kind of get back into poker and earn some income from that as well.
Were these big decisions for you to kind of run these tables out of the back of your store?
No, I mean, worst case, I mean, I get a landlord that slaps me on the wrist or something. I mean, it's of course, I didn't take any rake from the game. I didn't earn any money whatsoever or anything like
right.
that. It was all charity and free. But if anybody's listening, but
well, I dig, because it seems like, you know, there's this, you know, people can do what they want with their money is kind of I think a bit of this ethos here with the opportunity you're
Absolutely.
Providing for your players.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's kind of how I saw that. You know, I mean, I live in a place that's not necessarily. I mean, we can get to a casino, but I mean, it's a little bit of a hike. There's not one 20 minutes down the road. So there's a pretty good, like, home game circuit, or, you know, there's several guys that run games around here. But anyways, I enjoyed doing that. And we would kind of do that several nights a week. And I had one of my players was into me for a couple grand, because it depended on the player. I let him run on credit, that kind of thing. But he was into me for a couple grand, and he got locked up. And he basically didn't want to run interest on the debt, so he wanted to over-collateralize the money he owed me. And the only thing he had of value at the time was Bitcoin. Nice. So this was my first actual touch with Bitcoin. At the time, it was trading in the low teens. So basically, he was into me for like $2,000, and he sent me 200 Bitcoin to collateralize his debt, which was, I feel like it was $2,500 to $3,000 in total value at the time.
How were you guys transferring the Bitcoin at that time? I mean,
It's so long ago, it's kind of foreign to me, but it was just some website, because I remember I had a password to log in. I still remember, I'm not going to say it out loud, but I still remember the password to log in. I guess it was just like a web wallet that just had like, it was like a username and a password. I remember having to do something with like having a PGP key in case somebody needed to send me some type of email. And like, I had instructions literally printed out. Like, if I need to do something with this, like, here's what to do. Never had to do anything with it. And I basically turned it over to him afterwards. So he literally sent it to me. I saw that I could access it, and he probably had like the key or whatever, and could have just gone back in and taken. I wouldn't have known any better, but that probably wouldn't have been wise.
Yeah. I'm wondering what your comfort level was with dealing with Bitcoin, at first glance back then.
I mean, dude, it was, well, I mean, it was a couple grand. I mean, sure. To me, I could write it off and you know,
Got
be
it.
All right. But I mean, realistically, people in the, let's say the gambling world know that just absolutely kind of stealing or intentionally grifting somebody else some money could lead to some bad news for them.
Right.
So that kind of thing. But anyway, he got out of jail, and from what I understood, he sold most of all his belongings to pay it off to get his Bitcoin back. Wow. Which to me was kind of interesting because it's just, you know, it's like, okay, well, I don't know what the value he sees in it, but it kind of left a seed in my head. You know, there's something there that, right, that matters, or to, you know, for him to some reason. So that was the first Bitcoin touch. And then the next one came pretty quickly after. So my poker game, I have a lot of degenerate gamblers basically that played.
Sure.
And, I don't know if you know how poker is played, but like we were playing 1-2 or 2-5 no limit poker, and some people were straddling to like $50. We kind of put like unlimited straddle. I mean, they were just, you know, people were throwing lots of money around for that size of a game.
Okay.
And so we just had some, I mean, people betting $100 on coin flips on the side, you know, just dumb shit to,
right,
pass the time. So, several of these guys had bookies, several of them were, you know, wanted to know the score so they could, you know, call their guy or whatever. And I was like, wait a minute, you know, I'm the house here, you know, what am I doing? So, but basically I decided I was going to branch out and start, booking sports action, mm-hmm, at my games, which turned out to be, better for me than the game. So I was,
well,
of course I didn't make any money doing so, but right, if I were to theoretically say I did, I might have made a few more dollars doing so,
right,
my players, kind of bet frequently. I mean, I had people that wanted to bet on, like, there's a dart championship, which kind of sticks in my head. Like, of course people don't know anything about fucking darts, but you know, this guy that's literally wanted to bet on it, 'cause he just wanted to bet on everything that's on the board.
Sure.
And when you're taking those bets manually, you can't scale that. You just kind of have to, you know, okay, well, here's the line. Do you want it? Okay. Confirm. Got it. You know, and it's a lot of back and forth. You end up stuck on your phone all day. So I kind of searched for a automated solution to that. And I found, what's called a pay per head site, which is essentially an online, it's kind of like an app, somebody or a web interface you can log into and say, okay, the Dodgers are, you know, 2.5 mm-hmm. run favorites over the whoever. And you can place theoretical bets. No money gets exchanged with these sites. It's literally just a, you know, I set a theoretical credit limit in the app, give you your login. You make theoretical bets. It keeps a ledger of that and tells me theoretically who owes what at the right. end of each week. And then for each of those players that's active, whether you made one bet or a million bets, you pay per head. And it's based on your, you know, if you've got like 10 players, you pay whatever it is, like $12 a head. Once you're up to 50 players or you know, 10 to 50, you kind of, you know, it scales down in price as you scale up in players. And
theoretically,
once I got to yeah, right, right. In theory. So once I got over 50, because I expanded outside of my game, because that's, you know, I was good. I pay on time. I expect people to pay on time. You know, I operate very business wise. I don't really do a lot of bullshit when I say I'm going to do something. So, for theoretical gamblers, they like that. They like the consistency and whatnot. So I kind of grew the book. Once I got over 50 players, I got a call from this site, who's based out of Costa Rica, but they were basically like, hey, if you want to save even more on this, you know, on your fees, you could pay us in Bitcoin. We give you 10% discount.
Sure.
And so, you know, at the time, you know, I'm paying, I don't know what it is, but it's, mm-hmm. you know, in the neighborhood of $500 a week or something like that in fees. You know, what's $50? You know what I mean? Compared to, I don't know anything about Bitcoin. I don't know how to access it, store it, spend nothing, right? Doesn't right. matter to me. I don't care. I don't know why you want it. But that kind of planted another seed in my head as far as, you know, okay, these people would probably be considered gray market at best. You know, they're not doing anything illegal. They're just putting lines up and playing fantasy, right? But if they were in a weird spot, I'd imagine they would want money that wouldn't be able to be fucked with, right. So to speak. So that kind of planted another seed in my head. Mm-hmm. And then, and again, that was just a few weeks after the guy with the 200 Bitcoin had actually got his back. And then it's not a couple of weeks later, and the guy that helps me run my poker game, he used to, you know, cook, buy snacks, deal sometimes, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like just whatever we needed for the game, he kind of helped me run that. He kind of came to me, and he knew a guy who was basically getting just an unlimited list of drugs in town of the best A+ quantity, whatever, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not big drug people. I mean, I'm no prude. I enjoy myself sometimes, but, he basically is like, hey, I want to, I want to get some stuff from this guy. And I'm like, well, you know, he could be, who knows what, you know what I mean? That might just be the word on the street that he's the guy and you're right. going to get set up, you know, find out how he does it. So a little research led us to the Silk Road at the time, which was, I don't know, I feel like we're in about 2013 at that point.
Okay.
And, you know, he pulled it up and he showed me, and I'd done a kind of a deep dive one night into, you know, the Tor network and the, you know, what onion sites and what's out there, and, you know, just the nasty underworld of the dark web or the deep web, and watching YouTube videos of people explaining that and that kind of thing. So once I kind of had a feel for it and I saw the Silk Road with my own eyes, it was almost kind of too tempting not to just like, well, this is interesting. I gotta know if it works, right? So we basically ordered some, theoretically, he ordered some psychedelics. You know, I told him I'd pay for whatever. He handles the rest of that. So we bought like 7-8 Bitcoin, something like that. And I think they were like $80 at the time. We put half of it on the Silk Road and ordered some mushrooms. And lo and behold, a couple days later, you know, he's got the vacuum sealed, perfect packaging. You know what I mean? Looks like, you know, better than Amazon would send it to you.
Right.
And so we kind of tripped pretty hard that night, and we're just kind of like, our minds were just blown because, you know, we're like, you know, this is some, what is this? You know what I mean? This is some magic. And the process was so janky at the time too. It was, you know, I had to go to Western Union and send a Western Union to basically Japan.
Like from Mt. Gox, I guess.
Yeah. It was Mt. Gox. And basically had to send some money, to Japan, and like, you know, you're like, they're like, hey, at this address, you'll get money at some point in time. You know what I mean? And
right.
It might be in the next 2 days. So we're just kind of like, yeah, okay. And, you know, I like to say, you know, knowing what I know now, like, I would absolutely not do that a second time, not just for the legal possibility of ramifications there, but that obviously seems scammy, but apparently was not, and it worked. So
right. Well, maybe there's a code, you know, kind of like where in the poker world there's this code. It seems like you're comfortable in these venues where people honor the code, and the code is do what you want, just pay up.
Yeah, well, I mean, and it very well could have been some scammy person over there.
Sure.
That would have felt the same way. I might have just been more lucky than good on that. But yeah, I mean, I definitely kind of identify with that mentality. I mean, just be a man of honor. If you say what you're going to do, then do what you're going to say. You know what I mean?
Right.
So anyway, we basically we tripped pretty hard that night. I believe we watched Alice in Wonderland, which is kind of fitting.
Sure.
But we were just talking about, you know, holy shit, man. We just sent some shit to Japan. All of a sudden, we've got mushrooms on the doorstep.
Right.
And, you know, here we are now. So,
I thought magic that was pretty mushrooms, awesome. Magic money.
Yeah, no doubt. So, I'm kind of determined at that point to, I'm going to learn what Bitcoin is, because it can facilitate this happening, right? The people in Costa Rica want it for whatever reason. My, you know, guy that got locked up from the poker game was adamant that he wanted it back. And, you know, again, why would you be selling your furniture for this stuff if it didn't mean something?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm going to dive in. And then 2 weeks later, Silk Road is shut down, and I kind of burn it. I don't care anymore. Don't want to hear about it.
Right. I'm sensing a theme with the online poker shutdown, the Silk Road shutdown. You were shut down on Twitter the other day.
Yeah.
You know, there's a censorship theme. How much do you think, you know, gambling, you know, casino type atmospheres primed you for Bitcoin, you know, asymmetric bets, waiting for your turn kind of thing? How much do you think that primed you?
Probably more than I kind of consciously think about. You know, I definitely, you know, in the way that, not in the way, but I changed when I kind of came to poker as a human being, just, you know, learning the, you know, how to play the right way, how to read people, you know, there's body language to it, there's math to it, you know, there's kind of like, you know, Bitcoin, there's 50 disciplines that surround it, right? It's not just a thing. There's a lot of things that surround it. So kind of learning that, kind of thinking about that long-term mentality of what kind of pick your spot and be tight and aggressive. And when you find the right spot, you know, dive at it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't really kind of, actively think how poker did that for me. And I assume that it primed me pretty well for it, just kind of being in the ability to kind of separate emotions from money, things like that. You know, I could take an 80% drawdown and, you know, it doesn't feel good, but I mean, I would almost prefer an 80% drawdown right now, just because, you know, I get excited at the idea of cheap sats because my conviction is, I mean, it's 100% minimum. I'm sold.
Yeah. Have you had experience at a table where, you know, you've been drawn down 80% and fought your way back and grinded it out?
Oh yeah. Right. Many times. Yeah.
I'm sure that lays in somehow, to your Bitcoin, you know, ethos, I think. Why do you Bitcoin so hard?
Because what else you gonna do, man? If you ask enough questions and follow them to their ultimate conclusions, you kind of land at Bitcoin no matter what you do.
Yeah,
that's kind of the way I see it.
Yeah, if you could talk to Peter Schiff like face to face, what would you tell him about Bitcoin?
Man, I don't know. I don't really give a fuck what he thinks anymore. Like I said, I wear him like a mask. Everything that needs to be told to Peter has been told. He's well aware. He's, you know, I've got respect for Peter. If you take out Bitcoin, I've got some respect for Peter as who he is as a human being. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of the causes he fights for and his economic mind and that kind of thing. So he's a sharp guy. He's doing this at a very specific angle. I assume it's only because he can't sell Bitcoin or doesn't sell Bitcoin. And that's not good for his business if he converts, because being a Bitcoin bull is not profitable in itself, other than, you know, possibly owning it and profiting from it. So he knows everything he needs to know. I think he's actually kind of leveraging his son. And his son has kind of tweeted about Bitcoin a few times. And I think he's kind of leveraging that as the play to be exposed or to act like, you know, what I mean, to kind of play that up or
play
whatever. So, he's whatever, man. He's, you know, to me, if you're not, if you know enough to know enough and you're not on the train, then just get run over by it, man. That's the way I see it. I mean, it's, you've had enough time to pay attention.
Yeah.
And if you're not, then too tough.
I didn't really know him, before Bitcoin, but it, you know, I learned about him through Trace Mayer, and he kind of heard about Bitcoin so early. I just can't imagine how he's just, I see it as he's chilling his bags and he's just extremely bitter.
I don't know how you're worth whatever the hell he's worth. And, you know, if you heard about it at single or double digits and you didn't just take a flyer on it and buy 1,000 of them, you know what I mean? Just for shits and giggles, because it means nothing to you. You know,
We don't know. He does. Maybe he did. You know, I thought it'd be a lot easier for him to take like maybe the Dan Tapanero route and just sell gold and Bitcoin. I don't know why he fights it so hard or sees it as own. Because I think at this point it really gets him more engagement than anything on Twitter than tweeting about gold would.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, I think that's the only reason. He still puts the fishing hooks out there, and probably because a lot of Bitcoiners have that same kind of hard money mentality. Even though Bitcoin is superior, I mean, gold is obviously, you know, it's not like it's a joke or anything. So I'm sure he ends up recruiting some converts or some people that want to hear what he has to say. And, you know, I'm sure some people slide from the Bitcoin world towards his direction out of the, just the sheer volume.
Yeah. I think he's just trying to keep his gold bugs. I don't even think he's trying to get too many Bitcoiners. What do you think of gold's monetary premium?
Gold's monetary premium?
Yeah.
Well, the way I see it is one of the earliest things I actually tweeted at Peter was, you know, there's two things that kind of make up the price of gold, and it's the utility value and the monetary premium. And, you know, the utility value for, you know, something that goes in a piece of electronics or whatever the use case is, aerospace parts or whatever, that price I can't imagine is too flexible, because there are other materials that also work for those things. So I imagine the monetary premium, whatever the number is a small percentage of gold's price, right? Because if gold doubles to, you know, if gold goes to, let's say, $5,000 an ounce, it's not like the utility value is 2.5x or whatever it is, you know, to somebody that has to buy it for parts. They'll probably just use an alternative metal or whatever different source. So since that's kind of a fixed part of that, most of the gold's premium is monetary premium. And my mentality around that is, you know, he kind of shits on Bitcoin for not having intrinsic value, because you can't use it for another thing, right? You can't make an airplane or whatever out of that. But to me, that's because it simply is, the purpose is money, right? It has no, you know, it doesn't need the small fraction of its actual value to fall back on in the event that people stop using it as money to give it value. The fact that people can make a gold tooth filling, is that what drives the gold market? I mean, that's a stupid argument, right? I mean, that's just not realistic. And to say that that's why it still has value no matter what. Okay, well, if people stopped trading gold and only used it for tooth fillings, well, people would stop mining gold. I mean, you know, who would care, right? It would just be a thing. So, you know, to me, monetary premium is everything, and that's because it has certain characteristics of money, right? I mean, divisibility, portability, you know, all the scarcity, all those characteristics. And I just think, well, I don't think, I mean, I think it's pretty objectively true that Bitcoin does all of those things better than gold, at least if you know what you're doing, sure. to store it properly and that kind of thing.
How do you think the next like 5 or 10 years play out for Bitcoin?
I mean, it's hard to tell, man. There's going to be a lot of fuckery coming from the government, I'm sure. And it kind of depends on the price action. I'm sure some of it's going to be reactive. You know, if Bitcoin just goes stupid and 10x's, 20x's, whatever, from here in a short period of time, you're probably going to see a lot more urgency on the behalf of the government, who's obviously trying to put out their digital currencies or the central bank digital currency, the big push that's going on right now. And anything that's a threat to that, you know, might just get in the way. But, you know, no matter what, all these experiments fail over time, because you either just, everybody's just a slave to their government, has to do what the government says, and just kind of everybody lives in an authoritarian world and gets worse and worse conditions. They have to work harder, longer hours and more years for their currency that grows, you know, softer and weaker and is more at risk or risk for being censored or taken back from them with these digital currencies. You know, there's going to be so much control over people that, you know, at some point the people push back, and, you know, I don't see a world where humans just bend over collectively to puppet masters around the world. So,
right.
To me, it all ends at Bitcoin no matter what, because, I mean, what else, I mean, again, what else is there that's got those kind of properties?
Is Bitcoin like religion to you?
Very much. And I don't mean like you rely, I pray or anything like that to Satoshi or some shit like that. But I mean, religion, and it's, you know, a lot of people are religious about their, like their organized religions, because it's the source of truth for them. Right. They identify with the principles and those kind of things. And, you know, I've talked to too many Bitcoiners, and obviously everybody's different, and Bitcoin doesn't affect everybody the same way, but I feel like people that truly, truly get deep, and you know, the people that become obsessive about it, right? It seems like that's the path. If you study it enough, that's eventually just kind of takes over your life. But those people tend to, you know, they kind of like seek a higher purpose. You know what I mean? They want to do right by people. They kind of want to be men of their word, women of their word. They kind of move more conservatively. I don't mean that politically, but I mean, they kind of, you know, what's the impact of my decision, right? I'm not going to necessarily gamble and risk my children's future or something like that, right? They're more of the I want to plant the tree that I'm not going to sit under the shade of mentality. And you know, those people that kind of think long term, right? The generations ahead, what actually matters. And you know, to me, that's what other way is there to be? You know what I mean? And once you've seen that kind of light, how do you turn away from it? And you know, it's made me change as a human being. And I can't tell you how many ways. I mean, I used to have new plastic bullshit all the time that I was buying, and stuff that just doesn't matter at all. You know what I mean? It's literally like, I mean, any materialism that I've had is almost kind of gone. Like I literally just don't care anymore. You know, cause I want what's best for those around me and those I care about, and you know, try to be a person of honor, honestly.
Yeah. Do the people around you and those that you care about, have they heeded your word? Are they interested in Bitcoin? Do they think about money in the way that you do?
Well, most of them, they don't get a choice, because those close enough to see me enough, hear it enough, and they whether or not they want to, they kind of get dosed. But I mean, everybody within 1 degree of separation of me owns a Bitcoin. I mean,
oh wow,
straight up. No, I mean,
that's awesome.
I mean,
that's,
yeah, I mean, you family members, friends. I mean, whatever it is. You know, I think it was like New Year's last year. I was, I think it was maybe New Year's, but it was like Bitcoin was trading at 8K. And I sent out a group text and I was like, you can buy an unlimited amount. Hmm. And if it's less than 8K at the New Year's next year, I'll buy it from you for your price.
Right.
Here's literally risk free.
And people took you up on it, your friends and family.
Not so much family, but yeah, I mean, it was a couple bites, but most of it was just kind of like, oh, okay, you know,
right.
big deal, you know, kind of, you know, big guy over here. But it's just like, no, I'm just trying to literally lead you to the light risk free.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I mean, everybody that I kind of feel it's almost like my, I don't want to say like my duty or whatever, but not even to get people into Bitcoin, but to kind of wake up from the fiat trap. You know what I mean? Like I kind of view the world as like, you remember that show, The Walking Dead? Did you ever watch that show?
No, I did not.
Yeah, you didn't miss much, but basically I'm sure you can get the gist of it, but I mean, they were basically, the world was filled with zombies, right? They were just kind of walking around mindless. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There were people that weren't zombies, but didn't really have a home. So they kind of wandered around and they were looking for the right thing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then you had these people that are almost like in their little citadels or whatever you call it, wherever they could hold up and kind of defend the fort. And that's kind of how I almost see the world now. It's just, most people are just walking around, just blind, dumb, just whatever, you know, mm-hmm. Okay, I'll take this for a job. I'll go work and I'll put my kid in daycare and never see them again. And, you know, oh, you need me to stay extra and never ask for a raise or a cost of living adjustment and just get fucked and fucked, you know, I mean, forever. And that's kind of how the most of the world is slowly trained to be, you know what I mean? Just work off that 100K in student debt and then you'll finally be able to get a house.
It's interesting, because, you know? I was going to ask you what the barrier to entry is, and I think you kind of answered it where you said, you know, most of the world is trained to be.
Yeah, it's horrible, man.
Yeah. It's interesting because you look at, you know, your story and at different points you were kind of seemed to be seeking out more than was allowed, or you know, not so much allowed, but like to do what you want and to be with people who are also doing what they want and not to really quibble about that.
Yeah, well, no, that's definitely me. I mean, even when I kind of did the white collar job thing for a while after getting my degree, and even then it was kind of, you know, inside of me is just rebelling the whole time. You know what I mean? Like, this is not natural. This is not how it should be. This is not what you should do. This is, you're on a hamster wheel. So I've kind of been, I call myself unemployable. It's not true. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could be a very, very good employee. I can get things done. And I've done, you know, pretty big things at a white collar job on public sector projects and that kind of thing. But, you know, my mentality is not employable. You know what I mean? It's kind of, I need to be a free man, and I can do great, very hard work at whatever, you know, I think is right. But I mean, it's always kind of been, you know, what's right to me and what feels right and that kind of thing.
Right.
And it's definitely always been a search for more, but it's funny. A lot of those other things kind of fell away. You know what I mean? Once, it's almost like I found it, you know what I mean? I'm here now. Yeah. Sounds kind of corny about a cryptocurrency, right? To kind of feel that way. But I mean, sure. It's just kind of like, no, I found principle and
yeah,
truth.
We talk a lot about it on the show about, you know, Bitcoin is true north or Bitcoin Zen. So, I mean, obviously, you know, you're a hardcore Bitcoiner. What do you think of the word hyper-Bitcoinization? And I'm not talking about price, but I'm just talking about like where things are going for Bitcoin, where things are going the monetary system, you know, and how do you see things playing out? Maybe even, let's take a longer view, maybe 20, 30 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, so I kind of view Bitcoin or hyper-Bitcoinization happening. It's just kind of relative. So I kind of say, so like a black hole, right? When we look at a black hole through a telescope, it looks like it's standing still, right? Nothing's happening. Mm. Because time is so distorted at a black hole. Gravity is so strong. But at the event horizon of a black hole, it is absolute chaos, right? So it's things are flying in fast. It's pretty much about the speed of light. It's just distorted due to gravity. So I kind of see it that way now. Like if you're on the outside looking at Bitcoin, you've heard about it. Maybe it popped up in the news, but it's still not below the all-time high. Oh, that, you know, cool. I guess it's chugging along. You, me, maybe, we try to keep up with Bitcoin. You can't do this shit. I mean, it's too much, right? It's literally like the developments every day. You can't, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, bless you for trying to do a podcast, and I hope you're successful, but there's not enough. I mean, there's too many podcasts out here, and they still can't get through all the information, right? That's how much is going on. And when you look up close, it's just, it's super fast, right? It's the speed of light that this thing's growing. So I kind of, you know, that Bill Gates quote, you kind of overestimate in 2 years, underestimate what you can do in mm-hmm. 10 years, that type of thing. I think that's kind of what's going to happen. I think this year was a big year for people kind of waking up to kind of the, you know, the money printer go burr, haha. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody kind of like that rang true with a lot of people that normally would have been the zombies in The Walking Dead, right? They would have just been, you know, well, wait a minute, why can they just print this and just hand me money now? Why couldn't they do that last month when I needed it?
Right.
And I think slowly over time, more people will be woken up to Bitcoin, to use kind of like a topical term. So like coronavirus, the R0 or the R0 of a virus is kind of how viral it is, right? How much it spreads, how many people the average person infects. And I think the R0 of Bitcoin is going up, right? So the virality of Bitcoin is going up. Like it used to be, you know, some nerds kind of doing some things, trying to get people to come to a conference. Now, I mean, look at it, right? I mean, if you kind of really take a step back, I mean, there's CEOs spending $500 million out on this thing, right?
Right.
There are major players out there making real major moves. You know, people like Fidelity, you know, I mean, these are things that are not new to anybody that listens. But I mean, if you actually take a step back, I mean, these are the A tier, right? I mean, you're here.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's happening. I don't know how it actually plays out with the government wanting to fight it or whatever. But again, I don't see how any centrally planned anything ever works. I mean, you know, the free market's never been given a chance to be a true free market. And, you know, we've never had true capitalism, right? It's always been capitalism, except they get a subsidy and they get a little kickback, right? And they get tax breaks. You know, people having to truly add value to earn money has never just been fair across the board. And I'd be speculating if I said I know how that plays out, but I feel like it, you know, it bends towards justice, right? The long arc of whatever the quote, right? And it's probably not because that arc is being pushed by those at the top, but being pulled by everybody down bottom that just, you know, hears the truth, sees the light, right? And wants it. And you get enough Bitcoiners, you know, people that are true Bitcoiners, you get that kind of intransigent minority to whatever that threshold is. And I mean, we already won't shut the fuck up. You know what I mean? So, I mean, wait till we double or 10x in size of number of people. I mean, it's, you know, good luck stopping that train.
I keep going back to thinking about how, you know, you're a poker player and sitting at the table and it's win, lose, or draw, and it's on you. And I think that's what, you know, life is about. And what Bitcoin provides for people is, you know, an opportunity to be a win on you, and to see the game clearly, make an asymmetric bet,
to play a fair game that works, right? That's not rigged,
right?
You
know? Right. Do you think after all time high, relevant Peter Schiff is gonna disappear?
I told everybody, not long after I started this thing, which has now been, I think, over a year. God. But I said, hey, I'm here till the next all-time high. So, you know, people are probably tired of hearing me talking shit, probably tired of seeing Peter's face pop up on their timeline and whatnot. But some people still like interacting with me and messing around. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'll still be on Twitter either way, whether I just kind of fade out or not. Maybe I'll leave it up to the people, give them a poll and tell them to vote me the hell out or whatever. But I mean, I don't have any use for actually dealing with Peter anymore. Like I said, I wear him like an avatar at this point. I couldn't care less about what he does with his thing. So, no plans, but yeah, that was what I put in print, that I'm done after the all time high. So we'll see. Maybe it's next week. You never know.
Well, I'm so glad you hard forked the irrelevant Peter Schiff classic. I really appreciate it. You know, I he's just salty at this point and just the old man on the lawn telling us to get away. So I'm just, I think it's awesome to kind of get your vibe on Twitter. And I love one of the things you say is, you know, it's like, it's my money. It's just not accepted everywhere yet.
Hey, yeah, that's right.
It's just so, you know, first principle, self-sovereign. It's just like, this is my money. So, you know, if you want to take it or not. So I'm really happy. You know, I think it's awesome. Normally I ask people where they can find you. Obviously it's at relevantpetershift.com, at petershift on Twitter. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with everybody before we head out?
I don't know that I have anything specific that I want to say. I would just say that there's a Thomas Sowell quote, if you're familiar with him, a famous economist, that's stuck with me recently, and I just kind of keep hearing it in my head, but there's never been a shortage of people eager to draw up blueprints for running other people's lives. Mm. And just remember that there's always going to be somebody that tells you how to do it, but they've never done it. Or they're telling you to do it because they're benefiting off the sweat of your back. And I would just say, fuck all those people, and you do whatever you feel is right. Do your own research and be who you are, because if we have enough people that honestly take ownership of their life, man, whatever that leads, whether that's Bitcoin or not, I don't care where that leads you, but just that change in mentality and you know, we've got way too many soft people out there now that just, you know, wouldn't cut it in a real world where they weren't babysat. So, you know, by all means, do what you got to do to be better, stronger, faster, harder to kill, whatever that is. Protect your money and don't let anybody fuck with you. So that's about all you can really do.
Yeah. I hope you stay with us as long as we need you. I don't know how long Bitcoin Twitter will be here for. You know, I think eventually it might disappear because, you know, Bitcoin would just be money and everyone will accept it. But until then, I think your shit's evergreen. I love, you know, coming across your thoughts on Twitter. And I think that, you know, you are more relevant than Peter Schiff. And I'm glad we moved on. So I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. Awesome. You can tell him to send me his fiat. I'll send him my Bitcoin, and then I'll do some conversion.
That's what's up.
And we can really get relevant.
Yeah, I'd get on that deal too.
That's right. Yeah,
this was awesome.
Hey, well, I appreciate your time, man.
Yeah, same here.
All right, take it easy.
That was Relevant Peter Schiff, from corporate America to irrelevant Peter Schiff's worst nightmare, right here on the Bitcoin Matrix podcast. And thank you for listening. If you dug the show, please vote with the thumbs and press those 5 stars. That's the best way to spread the word. This is said. Peace out.